we're just planning out the schedule for the next few episodes, and it's not fun to have it dawn on me how weird the next week is about to be.
Yeah.
How intense everything is about to get. We've been
You're about to catch up.
Yeah,
you're about
to you.
Catch up to me. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, you got to go through your phase of you know how it was crazy before. Now it's gonna be really, really crazy for like a week, which is crazy.
We've been like lightly packing, you know, for like a little while now. Just like, oh, a box here, a box there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like slowly ramping up to like, no, wait, that has to happen. Okay, that room needs to be done now. I can't think about that room ever again.
Yeah.
So it's time for it to go. And the newest thing I have with this move, the first time I've ever moved with like tools, like power tools and like stuff in a garage and a shed, things I acquired, I gotta figure out how to load a push mower onto my truck, things like that.
Oh god,
like there's just gonna be all this extra space. We've already talked about this some, but like I have to drive a 26 foot long truck for 9 hours, probably longer.
Yeah.
It's gonna be longer than 9 hours. You can't drive that 70
you're freaking
miles
out
per hour.
It's he's freaking
be,
out people.
It's just gonna be a weird week, and I'm just gonna say it. If any of the episodes next week or the week after that are like delayed, you could stuff it. Like it's just because I don't know what happened. Who knows? Anything,
right.
Anything could happen at this point. Anything is possible.
Yeah. Well, I'm chill. Everything's chill with me. Everything's going great. I love my new TV. I have my chair count is 5 now.
Wow.
I have 5 chairs.
You've quintupled since we last heard about your chairs.
Oh yeah. They're reproducing via budding over here. I have a place to eat.
Very good.
Food. And I've been standing in my kitchen and eating for the whole time. The whole time. I've been just standing in my kitchen and eating. And now I have a table to sit at and eat like
very
a human
good.
Being. I've been sleeping on an air mattress. My real mattress gets in tomorrow. Today,
nice.
If you're listening to this, listeners, it's today. I'm telling you, Matt,
he's
that it's tomorrow.
Okay, great.
But for listeners, it's today.
Future Matt, keep
which
that
is
in mind.
Very exciting. I'm going to sleep in a normal bed. All looking great over here. Have I talked about my TV? It's pretty great. It's pretty great, my TV.
What LG, am I going to get? What's going to be my move purchase? Like, what's going to be my little thing that I
oh, I don't
get?
Think you get anything
no,
for
I
moving,
don't.
Actually.
I have too many things. The thing I get myself is a working upstairs bathroom sink. That's what I'll get
Ooh.
Myself, is I'll fix that because it doesn't work.
That sounds really nice. Well, hey, like, it's going to be so exciting. You're going to be in town. We're going to explore Minneapolis together, you know? And that's going to be great.
I found out that there is a women's sports only sports bar halfway between us. We have a little meeting point
Ooh.
Now. We get together, we watch the PWHL, and then
yes.
we go back to our respective houses.
PWHL, we are all about that, me and you, and potentially maybe some other friends of
some
ours
friends.
Are really about that.
There's
too.
Two
just
other people
to kind of
might be much more independently into it than Hunter and I, but Hunter and
I think
are
along
for the ride.
We are on the verge of launching the like worst list of projects that are all like related to each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, well, our branding has always been horrible and the opposite of what you should do. And there is a new project cooking in the Space Cats, Peace Turtles expanded universe, the SCPTEU, you know, and that project will solidify us as the dumbest people in podcasting.
And hilariously, like, it's the most approachable project yet. So that's nice.
Yeah, I can imagine who would want to listen to this new one. And the hint, you've already received your hint.
Yeah.
It's the PWHL, which you should check out, all right, if you want to prepare for the next project coming out of Horse House LLC,
Ooh,
baby.
How fun.
Let's go.
Hello and welcome to the Old Gamers Almanac. It's a flirty look at 30 years ago.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And today.
And
you're supposed to
today.
Say, and today.
Yes. Well, today we're not talking about today, except for that I did play this game today. We're talking about 1994's Subterranea for the Sega Genesis or the Sega Master System. And this is a game I have never, ever, ever heard of at all. It is by a company called Xyrinx. I could talk at length about this company because I've researched them a decent amount. I want to finish kind of setting up the game. It's this wacky little Genesis game where you play as a little ship, and the whole game is just navigate caverns and find things to unlock the key to open up the room to go through the next area. And it's the perfect concert of mobility and puzzle and exploration
and action.
I love this game a lot. I fell in love
with this game. Rules. This game owns really hard. I just want to say the only reason we're here talking about this game today, well, first of all, it came out in 1994, which is confusing actually because it does list 1993 all over it, but whatever, it came out in 94.
Yeah,
I don't know, whatever, it's a 94 game. I checked as much as you can check. I checked
all the magazines have it in March or April, like it's
we have the right to talk about it. And the reason we're here is I saw maybe a 5-second clip of this game and was like, I have to play that. Yeah. Not only just do I have to play it, so I would encourage you, if you've never heard of this game and you maybe don't even feel like listening to this episode, turn us off, pull up YouTube, watch just 2 seconds of this game.
Yeah.
And I bet if you're the kind of person that will love it, it will activate you.
Yeah.
Like Manchurian Candidate, you will snap at attention. And suddenly it will be time for you to really hog down on Subterranea.
The challenge I would put for somebody is to go watch its performance in one of the AGDQs, like 2018 GDQ. Mm-hmm. Watch that so that you really have a terrible representation of how hard... Like, I want you to see how...
How do you even speedrun this game? It's, like, so bullshit. It's, like, too bullshit, isn't it?
Well, what's...
Like, how does the speedrun work?
What I love about it is there's nothing gimmicky. It's just that they're actually really good at it. The whole speedrun is that we're good at the game. And that's
there's
the
no
only...
glitches?
No.
They don't, just, there's no glitches.
They just know how to play it well. And it's amazing, like, to watch them... And then when you sit down and you try to pilot this thing and you're like, wait, no, they made it look 4 million times easier than this. It's very good. And they're fast.
Do they die? Like, do they die at all?
Oh, they're just like, oh, that was a death. Whatever. Moving on. Keep going.
I love that. So that's what type of game this is. This game is hard, by the way. If you hate hard games, this might not be for you. Although, even if you do hate hard games, maybe you should stick it out. Maybe it's worth learning.
Here's where I made peace with it. I knew, I started playing it, saw it was pretty hard, watched the GDQ run, went, oh, that gets way harder too, huh? Mm-hmm. And I just made peace with the fact that, like, I will only get to a certain point in this game, probably. Like, I will just only become so mechanically proficient. But for me, the hook of this game is the exploration, because the big kicker here is there's 9 total levels. And the way this game works is you're this little ship, and gravity is what they advertise. This apparently gravity physics were just really not all like figured out at this point in time. Like, nobody had that many amazing gravity-based games. Gravity Shooter was a genre, but it was very limited. There's Gravatar. All of this games, like progenitors, are much older looking. There's nothing in this genre that looks like this game, I would say. Like, that just that it's not a very popular genre, and everything else is a little bit older. But you play as a ship, you can rotate left or right, counterclockwise or clockwise. And
it's like asteroid style.
It's like asteroids, but asteroids doesn't have gravity. So imagine if in asteroids you were always being dragged to the bottom of the screen. And so when you hit your blasters up, you're just trying to fight against gravity, and the physics of it feel impeccable. I mean, literally just perfect. It is a perfect feeling video game. And you fire a laser out of the front of your ship, which means if you want to fire a laser down, you have to be facing down and letting gravity propel you. But don't worry, you have like one little engine on the front of your ship where if you hit down on your D-pad, you can kind of back up as well. So you have like a front thruster and a back thruster to move yourself around.
I will say, let's not oversell the movement. The movement is awesome. And it's interesting. I maybe want to try and pull you back from saying that it's perfect. Because what it is, it's not Because if you say perfect, I feel like what you're going to communicate to people in 2024 is that, oh, I can pick this up and this will just feel good right away. It doesn't feel good right away.
You didn't learn how to drive a car right away, but cars are perfect.
See, it is. It is. If you want, I love that you like singled out a car, actually, because if you want one of those games that kind of feels like you're really learning how to pilot something, you're not, but let's say you want it to feel that way.
Yeah.
This is that kind of game.
Right.
This is a I'm going to learn how to stick shift type of game, basically.
But it's just so much rewards you for figuring it out. You absolutely can learn this game. It's not just the GDQ weirdos. Like, they are incredibly good at it, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But you could, if Hunter and I recorded our playthroughs of this, you would watch us in our latest runs and be like, oh, you get pretty good at this game. Like, anybody
can
do some pretty sick shit
sometimes in this game, dude. Like, every once in a while, I'll do something and be like, dude, that looks pretty fucking cool, actually. Like,
So the other thing that makes this game amazing, though, is not just that the mobility, like, truly works. It's the levels are set up. Again, there's only 9 of them, but they are set up where, at least for a while, you get, like, a mission briefing screen where you get the entire map laid out in front of you. Matt Martin, chef's kiss.
Yes.
A map? So
it's also useful. The map is like, it is a map of the level.
But also, like, you don't get to access this map later. Look at it now, figure out what you need to figure out from it, and then commit it to memory for the duration of the level. And it gives you a mission briefing. It tells you, here's the places you need to go. You need to go collect this sub-tank. You need to go rescue these people who are trapped. There's a couple things along the way that you should be mindful of. Maybe there's a big enemy. Maybe there's a sort of puzzle to solve. The best example of the whole game is level 3. You go around and you pick up these mirrors. And the mirrors have different angles to them. But you're trying to get past this huge mining laser. And
it'll kill you if you go through it. Yeah.
So you have to pick up these items that are these mirrors that are just sort of strewn about the map, and like equip them to this truck that's near the laser, and then you got to go get another one so that it fires an angled shot, and you use that angled shot to blow up a wall that gives you access to a new part of the level that has another laser. Like you are puzzle solving and all that, and in kind of the most fascinating little addition that could be your main source of frustration, probably will be your main source of frustration, but as the local frustrated gamer, I can tell you I don't think it was overbearing. You have fuel management in this game, and that's your timer on this game. There's no clock running, there's no timer, but your ship uses gas, and your ship uses gas even if you're not moving. It does so very, very, very slowly.
Yeah.
But if you're hitting the engines, it's using your gas a little bit faster.
And there are
fuel kind of around the map as well that you're going to have to think and strategize. When do I need to pick up that fuel? I need to get as close to out of gas as possible before I go fill up my fuel to then get to the next like leg of this level.
The difficulty curve of this game kind of comes in like phases. Mm-hmm. When you start the game, you're like, whoa, I don't even know if I can pilot the ship very well. And then you get like a little, you kind of get your bearings a little bit, and then you start saying stuff like, God, I die so fast. I don't have enough health. Mm-hmm. I just don't have enough health. How am I supposed to do this? I need more lives and more health. And then you like actually really get a lot better at driving, and you're like, actually, I've kind of got plenty of health.
Yeah.
I just don't have enough fucking fuel, dude. That's my problem now.
No gas.
Where is my gas?
Yeah.
I'm running out of gas now. And you don't notice that you're running out of gas when you're at the I don't have enough health stage.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
You have other things to worry about.
You don't learn that you need to worry about the fuel pickups when you're dying all the time anyways.
Right.
But
then
once you start dying a lot less, you start realizing like, wow, they actually made it where it's mostly about fuel management.
Yes.
Like, that's the last thing that you have to deal with in this game. And you will never stop dealing with that.
Yeah.
You will never have enough gas in this game.
For sure. You always need it, especially the part that I would say is the most old school feeling about this game is it is like arcade style. You try to get to the end of the game. If you fail, you start the whole game over completely. There's no roguelite nature to it. There's no save states. There's no checkpoints. Yeah. You just
you lose your weapon power ups.
You lose your weapon power ups when you die. They downgrade on you. I will note to people, play it on easy. This is 1994. We got a difficulty mode, and we have fully customizable controls. You can do whatever you want to the control scheme to best suit your style of play. That's amazing. And for a game that's like, this is as hard as we could make it, what a wonderful, you know, addition to do it. And I will note, in that easy mode, when you die and lose a ship life, normally you have lasers or whatever, and they can level up. You can get all the way up to level 4 by the end of the game. But if you die, they step down one level, and then you'd have to go find a new laser pickup. But on easy, they don't. You just keep them. And that is a massive advantage, actually. But outside of any potential, like, oh, you have a little bit more health and enemies die easier, that is what makes easy mode much easier. And I beat the game on easy mode. I got to level 7 a couple times on normal mode, but then it's just... that level 7 is fuel management, like, big time level. Yeah. And so anyways, getting back to just like the game at large, I just love like the focus of navigation. I do think too, if you put yourself in the mindset of that 1994 gamer, you can relieve yourself of the need to one shot anything, right? That's really what these games are about during this era, is they're not expecting you to knock this level out the first time. So it is annoying if the first time you're going to play level 6, you're like, well, I'm going to fail, and I'm going to have to redo levels 1 through 5.
Right.
Maybe 2 more times before I'll get to level 6 again, and then I'll have my second attempt at level 6. And that part, like, is just straight up a bummer. I mean, you can emulate this game and play it with save states, but I'm just telling you, I didn't. And I really don't find myself a particularly skillful gamer. I was playing on easy, and you can get through it, because especially those early levels, like, once you really start to learn them, you just know them. You just, they become so, so simple. I would say there's only like maybe 2 spots of the first 6 levels where you have to like be considerate. There's a boss in level 2 where it's like, don't go too ham. You can kill this guy pretty easily, but he can he can kind of goof you up if you're not paying close
enough
attention.
Well, I didn't understand how that boss took damage for a long time. And then I started realizing what was happening. Like, I thought the boss just took way too many hits kill.
Yeah.
And then I actually realized what they were trying to teach me with the graphics. Once I figured that out, that boss was easy peasy.
For sure.
To me, the only really big skill checks were level 3.
Yep.
And then level 7.
Mm-hmm.
Level 3 was just a little bit too much to do. There were too many things that could go wrong for me in level 3.
Yeah. And the memory thing, right? Yeah, there's one fuel pickup in that level I specifically remember. Or not a fuel pickup. There's a thing where you get some of the mirrors where they need to go, and then you got to go hit the button. And I would forget to hit the button. Yes. And if you forget to hit the button and you go down to the bottom of this other section, you do not have enough fuel anymore. You're dead.
Right.
You're dead. It's over.
Right.
So... having the memory, you do have to get these levels like perfectly mapped out in your brain and know exactly what your run is.
Yeah, especially those first 6.
Yes.
You really, by the time I was getting to the point where I was like on 7 and 8, like on those runs, it kind of becomes a little bit Sonic the Hedgehog eventually, where especially 4 through 6, if you know where you need to go and what you need to do, you can get through those levels like very quickly. Yeah. But it all becomes routine because of the fuel, right?
Right.
You have to hit things exactly the same way. You have to take the exact same path.
Right.
Because if you take, you try and do it. I mean, I'm sure if you're like a speedrunner, I'm excited to actually watch the speedrunning strat on this.
It's 8 minutes long.
That's crazy. Oh, I'm like jealous of
the
that.
The world record is 8 minutes, actually. The GDQs are like 12 minutes or something, but...
So it to me, it feels a little bit like you really have to navigate correctly. It's almost Resident Evil style, where it's as much about how you plan to get through the areas and repeating that in a way that I realize like might not sound super exciting. It is... It just feels so good to learn this game.
That's the biggest hook, is, and you know what? Some people are going to bounce off of it, right? It's controls are in the eye of the beholder. Like, it's right. a subjective feeling. There are games that feel great to Hunter that I never click into, and vice versa. This is mm-hmm. luckily one we both just fucking click into and yeah, like dude. A lot. But I do get the, like, for me, I would get annoyed at something that would happen, but it just never felt like the game was robbing me of something. It never felt right. unfair. It never felt like anything stupid was happening. If something bad happened, it was like, I know exactly what happened there. Oops, okay, I can fix that. I can right. do better next time, and that just won't happen again. There's not any sort of, like, random elements that really step on you.
Well, except for those jumpers.
I learned enemies. How to manage the jumpers. They call them Marios in the community. That's just Mario there, and he hits Jumpman.
Oh, it is kind of Mario. Yeah,
those are hilarious too, Jumpman. If anything, those were a welcome, like, invitation by the game to me. It's these little things that they're like these little pogo sticks, and if you go above them, they will launch themselves faster than you can even see them, and it'll mm-hmm. career you into. It'll just kill you in one hit. And what's right. amazing is it's hilarious. Like, it's so funny when they nail you because you just, like, careen off of another wall and explode. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those deaths where it's like, I can't be mad at that. Like, that was
right.
so insane and happened so quickly. Like, I just had so little time to react that
right.
it's like, all right, well, just reset the run. Whatever. It's fine. It's fine. Just go back to the base or anything. But I found, like, most often the deaths felt funny. The other way you can die is straight up running out of fuel, and it's like the slow, you see it happening, you're like, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna make it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try, but I'm not gonna make it.
Every once in a while, I would barely, there were times where I made it to the end of a level with no fuel left, just like barely parked it onto there. It's one thing that's insane about it to me is, like, the physics of the game are very, they seem very well developed.
Yeah, man.
A 1994 Genesis game.
These are some masterclass developers. Let's talk about them. Okay, it's time.
Yeah, tell me about them, because I didn't actually do that much research about it.
Zyranix, whatever their name is.
I know they eventually become the Hitman people, but they're not even the Hitman people that we like or know.
They're the original inventors of Hitman. They do Hitman up through Blood Money, which those are still great games. That was still even kind of like, not inventing a genre, but, like, I mean, those, you know, those are big time games.
They have that same style that the new ones do. I will say, though, a lot of people like, but I guess Blood Money is the one that people do like.
Yeah.
I never clicked with any of those. I couldn't do it until the newer Hitman, where I could actually get on board.
Right. The real one to talk about is the musician for this game, who is Jesper Kidd. Mm-hmm. The music in this game is incredible. Every level, every single track is very, very, very good.
I'll say this. Actually, the music didn't hit me very hard at first.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kept playing the game. And I think this is kind of a test, right? Like, because early video game music, it has to stand up to, like, 50 listens.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because you're just going to hear the same level music over and over the exact same way.
Right.
There's no room for any kind of variation in that way.
Yeah.
And this was a soundtrack where at first I was like, yeah, whatever. It's just another great Sega Genesis soundtrack. By the end of it, I was like, this is like some really great Genesis music.
It feels like working music. And my favorite my favorite part about it is, oh, so first off, what can be annoying about music of this era is if it's like too catchy of a melody,
mm-hmm.
that then eventually that melody is going to be implanted in your brain and it's actually going to start to drive you crazy
in an annoying way.
Right? So it has to be atmospheric. It has to be, like, in the background, but still kind of drive you. And this music does that. And it's not like every level is underground, like it's subterranean. You are in caves, and eventually
there's
some underwater levels, like where you get low enough to where you get to groundwater. You're going through water, but from level to level, each track just shifts, like, a little bit. Like, there's not huge sweeping things. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels very, like, isolated to whatever style Jesper Kidd was going for. And Jesper Kidd is, these are AAA things, but Jesper Kidd does the music for Assassin's Creed and the Borderlands series. So big AAA numbers behind this guy. He was also there for their Hitman days. So he was doing Hitman music and Assassin's Creed. He also does a ton of movie stuff. Like he does movie soundtracks and everything. He's just an interesting guy. He's well known enough, I would say, in the industry. But I just think that, like, you know, this is essentially his like earliest or one of his earliest games. And I just think it's a really good example of like his ability to sort of like isolate a world. He also is famous for The Adventures of Batman and Robin for the Sega Genesis, which is a notoriously good soundtrack.
Yeah.
So cool dude. Cool dude.
That is cool. I got a question though. Yeah. Is this their first game?
Like, it is their second game that I, as far as I understand it, where their first game is. This is their first game. They do a couple games after this. They make Red Zone and Scorcher, and then eventually there's like a bunch of legal troubles and they become IO Interactive.
I see. I just don't understand how this is their first game though, because this is just like, it seems, first of all, it seems very complex from programming. Not that I know anything about programming, but I think enough to get that this game would be very difficult to program.
So this team, they were Amiga like demo people, like they made Amiga stuff and they were a part of the demo scene for the Amiga. So they were a bunch of friends that were programmers for the Amiga and then made this company together after
the
fact.
So they're like British or whatever.
They're Danish.
They're Danish. Even cooler. Did you hear that, Brits? Even cooler.
The funniest factoid, and you'll hear this if you do go watch the speed run. A lot of this information, honestly, is like pulled from that speed run. They give some fun stuff. But the funniest thing is this game went through two waves of difficulty reduction before it was released. So it was makes two sense. Levels more difficult, and they were like, "No, we love it. Let's ship it." And Sega was like, "We need you to tone it down a little bit. No, we need you to tone it down again. This is still ridiculous." And they were like, "Fine." So they wanted to make one of the hardest games on the Genesis, apparently. But it's a hard game that never pissed me off, and that's a rare little bird. That's a rare little thing for me.
Yeah, I think it has something to do with how much, at least for me, how much the locomotion of the game makes you want to learn how to pilot this damn thing. Like you're just like, I want to be able to fly this thing really well.
Right.
So like as you mess up, you're kind of feeling like this, like, I'm not a great pilot yet. Like I want to become a really good pilot. And then as you get better at the game, especially when you get to the underwater stuff, because the underwater stuff is such a good shakeup.
Yeah.
Because you've gotten used to the way the gravity works is very specific.
Yep.
And then we introduce buoyancy.
Yeah. Reverse gravity.
The opposite, It's kind of the opposite.
Upside down gravity. And then you have to like completely flip all of your logic on its head. And depth changes the amount that the buoyancy pulls against
you.
Like,
it's not consistent.
Like that's how well programmed this game is. Like that's what makes this game feel incredible, is that it's literally like the depth to like what these things are doing, it's just not like a one-to-one. And even here's where I think it really won me over with like the controls, because you're absolutely right, it's about like how the mobility of it just always feels good and consistent and fair. Even if it's hard, it's not unfair, it's not janky, it's not doing anything stupid. It's not like a platformer where you're like, I should have landed on that edge. When you die, you always know exactly why. And one of the examples of how this locomotion really feels is, so in that laser level, one of the hardest, kind of dumbest things you have to do is line up this shot. The guy's firing a laser, it's bouncing off a mirror and going straight up. And then you're trying to turn that up laser with your mirror to go left. And the problem is where you need to be to get that laser to hit the mirror in the right spot, the where the laser is firing from is out of eye shot. So you're actually kind of blindly going back and forth as the laser like skirts past you to the right. And you're like, okay, let me aim a little bit right. Mm-hmm. But your momentum is always, it's never like, it's always drifting a little bit. So if you turn even a single degree to the right and you give a little boost and then you turn back to straight and you give a boost straight up, you'll still have a little bit of that rightwards momentum. You can almost never perfectly lock yourself in place and only be going straight up and down. Like, if you've started to give yourself left and right momentum, you're not getting rid of it ever, no matter how like small of it is, a little minutia thing it is. And I think that's what makes it feel so fair, is it's like, yeah, I mean, it's like we're sliding around on ice. We could almost get talking about some of the reviews here, but I have to skip ahead basically, because one of the reviews, or one of the blurbs, I think describes how the movement feels perfectly. So this is from GamePro. The animation is the star of Subterranea's graphics show, especially the movement of the fighter. This slick machine slides around the screen like a ball bearing on a steel plate. And if you're good, you can make wicked turns and slick sliding stops. And I think that's exactly true. Like, it literally feels like a physical object that you are manipulating.
Wow, that really nails it. That is a great paragraph. Congrats to whoever wrote that all the way back in 1994. That was pretty sick, actually. Yeah, I think this game is for people that, like, if you really like the fact that when Mario is running and then he stops running, he keeps going a little bit. If you like that, this game is sort of that, the game.
Right.
Like, it's all about how Mario stops running and then continues with that little bit of friction.
Yep.
You know, if you want your game character to stop on a dime and not have any physics to it, which is fine. That's a completely different game feel.
Yeah.
This is not for you. Mm-hmm. But if you want a sort of almost simulation-y like feeling, if you really like the way the asteroid's ship drifts, you know, I realize there's no gravity in asteroids, but there is like a because there's not gravity, if you move in a direction, you kind of keep going. Okay, and if you really like that, this game is gonna freaking sing to you. And really, honestly, I think it's like it got really good review. Well, actually, it got middling reviews somewhere.
It's super we'll talk. There's one where GamePro went nuts, but everybody else, it's like middling I think it's just kind of divisive. It's like it hit for some people, and then there's a few people that are just like incredible, almost perfect. Like you just can tell who it like strikes a chord with.
Well, and back in the day, and this is still, I mean, back in the day, as far as I know, this is still true. We pretty much expect like game journalists to play like way too many games and way too quickly.
Right.
And I guarantee you, especially looking at the EGM review, which I'm looking at right now, that from reading these scores and these blurbs, that what happened was they were like, this game is really hard and we got a bunch of other games to play. I maybe don't have time to master this.
Right.
Because if you bounce off this game, you probably think it sucks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're just like, it's hard, I don't like how it feels, then it's really easy to just dismiss the whole thing. You really got to stick it out and learn these controls. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, maybe you're not in the mood to learn a game.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Baseball sucks. It's like, I swung a bat one time. There's no reason to ever like this thing. Like, I it just doesn't quite work. Do we want to talk about like what the rest of the magazines were saying?
I think the most, so what's going on with Game Fan? I don't even understand these. Oh, I see.
We haven't done a proper Game Fan review yet. Like, we haven't actually pulled up the Game Fan, like, actual score-based reviews yet. So this was the first one I found for a game we're covering.
I've actually never seen it looking like this.
This is Game Fan's, there's a chunk, and maybe it's not in the first couple issues or something, but yeah, at least in March and April, they have this section of the magazine where it's just them burning through reviews. And it's these little graphs like this, and it's basically, you can get a score out of 50, which is really, you have five metrics that you're getting a score out of 10 on. You have graphics, music, control, play mechanics, I don't know how that's different than control, and originality, which is an interesting one. And so across our three reviewers and Game Fan, one guy gives it a 42 out of 50. It's an 88899, which I think that's about where my heart is at with this game.
Yeah.
I think it looks beautiful, sounds beautiful, controls. I'd give it a 9 or even 10 on the controls, honestly.
I'd give it a 10 out of controls. And then I feel like, you know, the thing that I feel like doesn't really sing that well, it's so hard. It's a really flawed way to evaluate games, is breaking them into, because I was about to say, I don't really like the level design.
Mm.
But for what you do,
it's perfect.
The level design is perfect.
It. Yeah, I love the level design. Because there's times where you're a little bit confused. You're going through a cavern and you're like, wait, is this the right way? And it's like, no, it's not. You just wasted a bunch of fuel. Gotcha. You got to try again. Like it absolutely works. Yeah.
I want to criticize the level design, but it doesn't make sense because if I take it out and just have it separate from the controls, then but that'd be like, all right, well, Mario levels aren't very good if Mario can't jump.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, of course. Like,
who would have thunk? The other two reviewers give it a 38 and a 37, which is a smattering of sevens and sixes and eights. And on EGM, it got a 6, an 8, and 2 7s. So averages out to basically exactly a 7. I do think this is a quintessential 7 out of 10 video game in terms of what reviewers bring to the table. I think it's a better, I think it's a 9 out of 10 game. I love a tight little package that just, this is exactly what we deliver. Nothing more is needed, whatever. I played it for free because it's 2024, right? If I had paid $60 for this in 1994, I don't know how I would have felt. But you are right, 200, though, that they all sort of mention the difficulty, especially the lowest reviews. That 6, don't expect to beat this one the first time you play it. You might get frustrated.
Well, it sounds like you did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sounds like the reviewer got frustrated. It's funny that they have to... I notice that a lot in the language of these, is they will extrapolate their experience and project it at you.
Right.
You're probably going to... as if they're some expert. Listen, I mastered the game, but you're a little scrub. Actually, maybe I do love this kind of language. This is exactly something I would do. But... Right. It's so funny how frequently they do stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I completely agree with you. If I was an EGM writer in 1994, I probably would be like, this game's it's like a 9 out of 10. Yeah. I don't know. It might even be a 10 out of 10 for me, just because I can't point to a lot of games that feel like this.
Yeah. What's the flaw, basically, right? Is where I keep coming back to. It's what am I supposed to say is a 10 out of 10 if I can't find a single flaw in this game?
Even the difficulty... If it wasn't difficult, then you wouldn't learn how to fly like that.
Right. Exactly.
So, how do you get the difficulty
and
out
honestly,
of there? It needs
the
to
difficulty,
be hard.
Again, the difficulty is only, at first blush each time. Think about how hard the first level is because you don't know how to fly the goddamn ship. And then every run after... the first level is this quick little cakewalk. You don't even worry about the enemies in the first level. You know the first level, you're like, vroom, run over, grab that thing, vroom, go down to the bottom, get the sub, I'm out. I'm done. I didn't attack a single thing.
Right.
I'm just in and out.
Oh, yeah. You stop shooting at stuff eventually. You're like, I don't have to kill any of this stuff. That's actually just a distraction.
You know what I learned is you don't have to, in missions where the mission briefing is like, there's a guy you need to kill. You don't have to kill those guys ever. You don't, the little mech that jumps, the little hopper, you don't have to
kill
him at all.
You don't have to kill that guy? No. I hated killing that guy.
Yeah, you don't have to. You can skip them. If you can find a way to sneak in and pick up enough of the, survivors, which is hard.
POWs he's jumping around. For some reason.
The POWs.
I'm not really sure
of
what's
aliens,
going on with that.
What war? I don't know.
There's some war. There's a war happening. Who knows what the story is? Who cares?
I wanted to read this one. The EGM review that gave it an 8 is really where my heart is at here. Here's a game with originality. Subterranea offers tons of strategy, but not without some agonizing features. The constant gravity keeps pulling you down. While this is the major part of the game, it will take time to get used to it. Other than that, the control is great. The music has a soothing beat, and the missions can get really rough. It's refreshing to see programmers come up with new ideas these days. I think the fact that he's saying the gravity is a negative is the reason he's giving it an 8, and I disagree that the gravity feels bad. It's kind of the whole point of the game.
Yep.
And so, I did have to shout out this horrible blurb from EGM as well. This is in a different section. This is in one of their game overviews. Subterranea, the good. Hey, it's a shooter with a purpose. The play control and variety of missions make this cart a blast to play. The bad, you've got to play this cart a few times before you get the hang of the controls. Once you do, look out. The ugly, the floating skull with a tail in the second level reminds me of a girl I used to date. Hence, the ugly.
Wow. Yeah, dang. That's... It's unnecessary, these types of jokes that they just kind of ham fist.
Oh my God. It's not even a good joke. It just was never going to be a good joke.
I'm not
joke.
Even sure what the joke is. It's just I dated someone. I think They are ugly. Yeah. Okay. Great. That sucks.
Good for you, man. The last one is this GamePro review, which this is the one where they went nuts on it. So if you'll remember, GamePro gives you the faces that are like, blah!
Mm-hmm. The freaking warheads.
The warheads guy. Like, yeah. So these four metrics are out of five. Graphics, 5. Sound, 4.5. Control, 5. Fun factor, 5. You'll dig the concept of this underground shooter. Excellent graphics and perfect controls make this one of the best games of the year. They said this in May.
Yeah, GamePro wins this episode. I think GamePro is... I don't always say nice things about GamePro whenever we talk about the different magazines, but GamePro was ahead of their time this month.
Yeah.
Also, though, it does say Subterranea by Sega of America. That's not right, right?
I don't understand.
It was published by Sega.
I've seen other people reference this as a specifically Sega game, so I don't know what is going on with the, like, rights and publishing and, like, I don't know. Xerinx is not, like... holistically owned by Sega, as far as I can tell. So I don't know what's going on there, but it's published by Sega of America. So I guess that counts or whatever. Also, there was this ad in EGM that was really great. It's just a big full page or double page spread of Subterranea, but on the left panel, it's a competition, and they say if you can send us a picture of your final screen. The U1 screen, if you beat it on hard, you will get entered into a raffle and we will fly you out to New York. That's how hard this game is. They're like, we can burn money on seeing if people will try to beat this game on hard and fly you out for like this huge giveaway.
And you had to do it between April 1st and July 15th.
Yeah.
So they were like, we just finished this game.
Yeah.
We need you to beat it on hard before July.
Right.
If you want to enter into this contest. Which, I mean, I think, obviously, I mean, we didn't spend that much time with it. Like, it definitely, you can learn this game in a week if you're playing it intensely,
for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's definitely doable. But on hard, I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't even check out hard. I wonder what if, mechanically, if there's any differences, or if it's just like, God, you die instantly. You touch a wall and you die. You know, is it like playing Operation all of a sudden? I could see that being a factor. Like, never touch a single wall.
Yeah, I mean, it's so fun that this is a game that resonated with you.
Mm-hmm.
I had like a weird feeling that it might. But then when I started playing it, I got kind of heartbroken. Because when I hit the, I was like, oh no, this is one of those like hard as nails games. I'm like, well, now there's no telling what's going to happen with Matt.
You know what it really comes down to is it's that map and key exploration thing. That's going to get me every time. And this just feels really, really great. The maps on those first times you're playing them where you're like, I'm not going to beat it this time. I'm going to have to replay the first four levels or whatever. First off, like I said, the speed run is 7 minutes long. To play it yourself, not as a speedrunner, you could probably get to level 7 in, I don't know, what, 10 minutes? 15 minutes at the most? Like, that's going pretty slow with some of this stuff. Like, it's just not super long to get through any of these levels. And the learning the levels is as fun, if not more fun, than the rest of the game. Like, I really do love booting up a level for the first time and like, okay, let's figure out what's in here and let's go explore the nooks and crannies, even though I know I'm going to run out of gas and not make it back to where I need to get or whatever. But just like, I love a game where you map stuff out like that. It really is my favorite kind of hook in games. It is equal parts an incredibly difficult action game and a very interesting little exploration puzzler.
Yeah. We talked a lot about level 3.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about level 9.
Sure.
Which is it's an underwater mostly level. It's a pretty long level, but they give you unlimited fuel.
Right.
And they just make you go underwater as much as possible, which is like, so obviously we've got the gravity at the beginning. You hit level 7. And then it's like, oh, it's water time. Buoyancy is the opposite of gravity, you dum-dum.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to level 9, and they have their final twist, which is, okay, now we're going to give you way too much water.
Yeah.
Like, more water than makes sense, but you have unlimited fuel.
Yes.
Which means now you're going to even utilize your movement abilities in a third new way, which is to be constantly...
Just gas it, baby.
Constantly gassing. And it's not like you're going quickly.
No.
And in fact, you kind of, the way your momentum works, if you get going fast, that could actually be a really bad thing because you get into this place that I just, it kind of felt incredible to me, because I'm like, wow, I have been playing this game for so long and it still has like a new trick with these same mechanics, you know? And you just kind of get to this point where it's like you're feathering your gas in such a particular way where it's almost like you have to learn how to pilot upside down. You no longer go directly at stuff. You kind of use your gas is like a, it's like your butt is just kind of like propelling you.
You're keeping the momentum. You're just barely maintaining that momentum. And actually what you're doing is controlling your height. The amount of gas you're giving is making sure you don't go up or down too much, but you've hit this consistent, like, I'm just going forward about five miles per hour.
It's riveting. I mean, it like really blew my mind. Like,
throw in the mix of that, there's these crabs that come out with like one huge fist. And so you're doing that. You're doing this incredibly precarious, like, oh, if I just barely miss this thing. And then a crab starts charging at you from the other side. And he's like, now I have to rotate a little bit extra to shoot at that guy with either a missile or my boot, you know, beefed up lasers. But to rotate will throw off all of my inertia, which means I'll lean up, kill that guy, and then have to spend like 10 seconds resetting and getting my momentum back to where I wanted it, and then continue the feathered approach.
Right. Yeah, so basically, anytime an enemy comes at you, you're going to mess up all of your thing going on. Because you're like in, you're like zenned out. You're like, I am doing this perfectly. Yeah. I'm at the exact right degree forward, you know, and then the enemies come.
It's like playing an egg in spoon game where
that's so good.
It's like you're
Matt.
Like walking through the sand, and then it's like, and then here's an obstacle like course in the middle of it. And so you're like, I mean, that is the thrill of this game, is like a weird little trapeze artist egg and spoon game.
Dude, that is a really interesting call out. Like, it is like egg and spoon. Like, it is, that is such a perfect analogy for what you are doing. Like, because it's delicate.
Yes.
And it's all like little, okay, I have to make a little adjustment here. Uh-oh, I went a little too far. Now I got to come back a little bit because the eggs are going to fall off the spoon.
Yep.
And that's the thing too, is failure. The reason Subterranea is hard is because if you mess up, you are probably going to die.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot
of...
It can
go south quickly.
You get better at taking little bits of damage and not having everything be catastrophic. But at any moment, you could mess up enough for it to be you're dead and that's it.
Yeah, we didn't talk at all about the way you can like accidentally suddenly get like caught on a corner in a weird way, and you just like essentially your ship is like, I'm gonna hit the gas as hard as possible and just blow up instantly on the wall. Like, that absolutely happens, but again, it never feels like that was jank or something stupid. It was just like, I knew I was too close to that wall. I should have been more I should have given it a bit more distance or whatever. It's a fascinating little thing.
It works exactly the way shields work in Dune.
Oh yeah.
Where if it grazes, if it doesn't enter the shield, it's fine. But if you get too close to something and it really comes into your shield zone, you basically just blow up right away.
Is that your way to make sure we're slow always blade, connecting Dune back to everything?
I'm doing it. The slow blade pierces the shield, okay? Yes, yeah. Young Paul, slow blade. Excellent, you know. Pay attention to the future of the Patreon feed, because you're getting that Dune Part 2 review. You're getting it.
Hunter, can we please put this game on the list? I think it's one of the best 100 games we've ever played.
It's going on the list. Yeah. No, it's going to. It's absolutely shot up in my this is one of the best Genesis games of all time estimation. And more people need to play it for sure. Mm-hmm. Like I had only ever heard one person ever bring this game up previously. And seeing that clip, I was just like, oh, this is probably incredible. Yeah. So we got to play this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what do we do with it, though? What I mean, I don't want to overstate it. I've loved this game. I love how it feels. It's not like I'm going to sit here and think it's like even top 30, probably. Right. Like, it's not.
Why not?
Let me look at the third. Hang on. Let me check my math, I suppose.
Can this be, I'm just saying, because
I liked it more than Penny's Big Breakaway. That's the thing, is you all put Penny's Big Breakaway at 30, and I like it more than that. But there's a lot of stuff in the 20s that I don't like less than this game. So I don't know.
Well, here's what I'm saying, is that you know, I want you to want to put this game higher than I want to put
it. Sure.
Because I think that's the truth of your experience.
Yeah. No, I love this game.
And I want you to want that.
Yeah. Here was something I thought while playing it is, this is my Bongayo. It's not as funny as Bongayo. Like, it's not as stupid as Bongayo, but I clicked into it more than I clicked into Bongayo mechanically. And Bongayo is a mechanical game. Like, that it is mostly about how that game feels. And I think this game feels a lot better and is more interesting to explore the spaces in it.
Yeah, So I do think I like Bongayo better, but my feeling is that I think you should put Subterranea wherever you want. Like, because I'm just not, even if I disagree, I just feel like I'm not going to have a problem with it.
Oh, man.
You know
so
what I mean?
Tough,
it's the type of game where I'm like, I don't want us to oversell it.
I know.
But the thing is, it's such a little diamond in the rough.
Yeah. Honestly, this feels like the only time this has ever happened with this show. I feel like our other unsung heroes have always been a game where I've heard at least somebody else sing its praises. You know what says everything to me? The two times this game has been at GDQ, it's in the awful block. It's in awful games done quick. And there is nothing awful about this game,
that's
except
crazy.
For people suck at it. Like, that's the only thing awful about it is it's hard to control at your first time. Like,
I just want to head this off at the pass. I sat down, I just want to be like basically completely clear. I sat down with this game for probably 3 to 5 hours and was like, I'm bad at this, and this might take me a really long time.
Yeah.
And then I sat down with it for an additional 5 hours and I completed it on normal.
Right.
So that's only about a 10-hour process. Now, we're talking 10 hours to play a game that probably, like, if you're good at it, is probably less. It's less than an hour of content, for sure.
Right.
It's probably like 40 minutes of content. I bet on the run that I won, I bet it took me around 40 to 50 minutes.
Yeah.
You know?
Half of that is level 9.
Yeah, and a lot of it is level 9.
You're going so slowly and so carefully, and like the first 6 levels you just like zoom right through. Here's my issue is the list is jank, right? My Hyperlight Drifter is 27 below Bongayo. Like this is where I run into these issues.
But you don't
Final Fantasy VII Remake is right above Bongayo, and it's hard to say like that Final Fantasy VII Remake really struck a chord with me, and I can't really argue Subterranea went above it. So I'm really struggling with this low 20s area. Super Mario World, Halo Combat Evolved.
God, like,
these are big games. And I can't.
I just want to say, I think that us keeping it at just 100 is good because it's tight. We also haven't decided what to kick off.
That's
we
the bigger
kick
thing.
Something off.
We should probably kill something. It's hard to say exactly what. I want to make sure we're maybe like knocking off. Not we don't have anything like this game, so there's not that.
No,
argument.
We really don't.
The only other thing would be like taking off more games of this era. The big fear with this year is that this list is going to become way too many 1994 and 2024 games. So I'm like, you know, what 90 through 95 game can get taken off in exchange for this is usually where my head goes first. I'm still kind of a journey to silliest naysayer. Honestly, even Bonk's Revenge, this kind of like I wouldn't be like heartbroken to lose Bonk's Revenge at some point.
I'm a bit of a representative guy. I think this is a difference in philosophy here. Journey to Silius is one of two NES games we have on the list.
Yep.
If you give me an NES game, I'll kick off Journey to Silius.
Right,
no problem about
today. Yeah.
But so I'm okay. Like, and then the other thing is kind of true of Bonk's Revenge too. Like, that is the only TurboGrafx we got.
Yeah.
So
we got to keep it around. I'm okay with keeping it around. Here's a weird one to toss out there. Let's replace with a locomotive exploration game. Mirror's Edge, a locomotive exploration game.
Oh.
Is there room to lose Mirror's Edge here?
I'm thinking along the same lines as you, but I'm gonna propose a different game. I think I like Mirror's Edge philosophically. What about Descent?
I knew
what
it.
If we kick off Descent? Because honestly, yeah, this is what Descent should have been for us.
Yeah, you know what just interesting? Wasn't. Oh my gosh, they're like the same game, aren't they?
They are the same game. Beautiful
map, except for the map in Descent specifically is like truly at times abhorrent to try to like navigate. Like the wireframe hurts you as much as it helps you.
And it's not about speed or and friction. No. It's about like I mean, you're kind of playing a first person shooter. Yeah. It's just like the weirdest first person shooter you've ever played.
I really want to play one of those later ones. I want to play like not even necessarily Descent 2, but like one of those, you know, like the mm-hmm. fifth entry in that. I want to get to the ones where it's like we really figured out how to make these games, and I want to get one of those on the list. But yeah, I think it's okay if Descent goes here.
There's gonna be more PC stuff, and we've already got plenty of PC stuff for sure on there. Okay, so number 87 was Descent. Sorry, all you Descent heads out there.
It will come
get
back.
Another shot with the sequels.
Yeah. I want to do one of those later ones. So to go back to the what, you know, how high up does it go? Kind of train. It's so tough because I want to be cool, right? I want to be a cool guy that's like check.
And you're getting the pass. Check out Subterranean. I'm just saying, like I'm just saying. Name a number, and I...
Here's what I know is going to happen, and maybe I'm okay with this, but what I know is going to happen is I'm going to put it way too high right now, and end of the year, we're going to dump it into, like, the 50s, and that's just going to be fine.
I kind of doubt it, man.
But for this, I mean, at least the 40s, I think. I think it's going to fall on a re-ranking kind of episode, but for today, earlier I said there's like no flaws. The only flaw is the final boss is like not interesting, right?
The final boss is kind of nothing. I didn't even engage with it because I on my run I had enough lives where I recognized that once I got to it I was like, "Oh, this is just going to kill all my lives, but I'll kill
like
it first."
The game asks you to do it that way. There's not much more you can do in that boss fight besides endure it. So, you know, to that end, but the rest of the enemies are great, and even the rest of the bosses are pretty fun, if not pretty short, generally speaking. I don't know. I'm really torn up here. I definitely can't put it like above Remake, and to that end, it isn't as funny or anything as Bongayo, so I really don't think I can put it above Bongayo. I think the spot I really want to put it, I don't want to be disappointing. It's at least, here's what I'll say definitively. It goes above Final Fantasy X.
Well, yeah.
And I would put it above Super Monkey Ball because I think Super Monkey Ball generally feels like shit to me. Like, it's a goofy game, but it feels terrible to play. Talk about a ball on a steel tray, a ball bearing on a steel tray.
I like Subterranea better than Super Monkey Ball also.
Yeah.
But then I think you should put it above Final Fantasy VII Remake. I think that's where I gotta play Rebirth.
You know what I mean? That's the problem. This game came a few weeks early. I need Rebirth to like completely rewrite Remake in my mind so that I don't need to worry about it anymore.
Final Fantasy VII. The Final Fantasy VII Remake project is just in general like a very weird thing.
Yeah.
For this show.
Right.
Because it ensures that, I mean, eventually we're going to have four Final Fantasy VIIs on the list.
And yeah, we'll have to start killing them off. Yeah.
Well, I think,
Remake's the first to go almost, unless they like truly screw the landing. Like
I'm just going to make a prediction right now. I bet that all four make it onto the list. And that once that happens, three of them leave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
one becomes the ultimate.
And I already know which one is the one that stays. Like, it's not going to be Remake or Rebirth or Reunion, they're going to call it.
We'll just finally be like, yeah, Final Fantasy VII is great.
Yeah, Final Fantasy
VII. We've already
kind
of done that. I mean, Final Fantasy VII is our seventh game. Like, we've already sort of decided, like, Remake decides that VII is, in fact, great. And it has made me appreciate VII more. Like, I can go back now and play VII and like it more. All right, fine. I won't go above Melee and Snatcher, but Subterranea is our new number 23. I'll regret it later, and today I'll feel happy that we put a cool game really high up on the list.
I bet you, Matt, whenever it's time to re-rank, that Subterranea will be one that I will also be interested in keeping in a good position. The only problem is that, especially in the 20s, there's a lot of stuff that I care about that I feel like I will want to plop high.
I think that's really where
Subterranea might be one of those too.
Yeah. I think that's where Subterranea falls short though very often, is because the first 30 games on this list realistically are a game that one of us truly, truly loves, right? Like with all of our heart. And Subterranea is a game I think is incredible. There's not enough time to spend with it to say that I'll ever truly love it, right? It's just really not that kind of game. It doesn't ask you to love it. It asks you to get good at it. And hey, great job. You got good at it and you beat it. Anyways, see you later. Like, it's a perfect rental game. That's what I love about it, right? It is such a good weekend rental game. Try to figure this little thing out, get good at it, and then be done with it probably forever. You don't have to ever come back to it or anything necessarily. Right. The thing we didn't talk about in this episode at all is that EJ was invited to be on this episode and he played some of Subterranea, and he messaged us back earlier and was like, I'm just not feeling it. This game's not doing anything for me. So that's what's in my mind for the re-ranking, is we'll be contending with EJ will be like, yeah, I played that game. I don't care. Put it in the 60s or something. And then we'll have to reason with that, and then it'll get dragged into the 40s or something. But for today, for now, 23 will do.
Yeah, if we're overestimating it, we may as well. Yeah. I'm okay to overestimate it now. And that's the whole thing about the show. Thing. I just realized we're saying that Subterranea is a better game than Super Mario World.
It's the dumbest shit I've ever
seen. That's kind of hilarious. I'm more of a Super Mario Brothers 3 guy, and I don't even agree with that. That's crazy.
That's what happened with Pennies, is Mario World is just in such a dumb spot on this list because I don't know why, because a lot of other crazy stuff
compromises is why.
So a lot of compromise happened.
Yeah.
So funny.
I mean, I think eventually there'll be so much Mario on the list too that we'll have to consolidate the Marios. Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true.
And so I don't know. I mean, I don't know what happens when that happens.
Right.
But
we did.
But So there we go. Number 23, Subterranea. I will say, just to couch it a little bit, I think where Subterranea is in my personal life is if you made me rank Genesis games, it'd be a lock for a top 20, and I would talk about putting it in the top 10, but I don't know, it's not a lock for the top 10 Genesis games for me. But it's definitely a cool one. It reminds me a lot, if you like Subterranea, you should check out Ranger X, which is a mech game that has a lot of weird movement and is just kind of nuts.
I'll tell you what, if you were in 1994 and you could beat Subterranea on hard and mail it to EGM, they would give you a copy of Ranger X. That was one of the rewards.
And Gunstar Heroes. This crazy, we just know what's good on that. We'll just give you all the good stuff on the console. What is that? But yeah, whatever. Cool. Well, hey, there we go. Another one for the books.
Yep.
Please, check this game out.
Seriously.
This week and last week, we're just telling you to check out games that you maybe haven't played, that's sometimes what the show is. We're not always just talking about obvious things and saying it's great. Sometimes we're talking about stuff like this, or talking about obvious things and saying it's somehow worse than stuff that objectively it's not.
And then regretting it in 4 months, just absolutely regretting it in 4 months. I do want to thank some poor Richard's Almanac, though.
Do it.
NPC Aaron, Anatrock, Cardinal Billy, Brendan, If Then, DM Anonymous, Jukebox Hero, Magnanimous, Teddy's Jam for You, and Zest Appeal. Thank you all for your continued support at that poor Richard's Almanac level. Also, thank you to all the other old farmers. I love you all.
Yeah.
I love everybody on our Patreon. I love our Discord. We don't talk about it enough. We don't plug it. We don't do a proper rundown on this show.
Mm-hmm.
But the OGA Discord is such a chill, wonderful little place. It's pretty small. It's a little tight community. And if you're craving that for games and you just want a place to hey, I was playing this weird game and I want to bounce ideas off somebody, come hang out. That's happening all the time on there, and it's so relaxed, and it's just a no shame zone, and I really, really love it a lot.
Yeah.
It's my favorite Discord that I have, and I like it more than the Space Cats Discord. OGA Discord is a great place.
It's a really good hang. Also, if you want to play EverQuest, I play EverQuest on Mondays right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Although it used to be Tuesdays, now it's Mondays. But the other thing is that I'm realizing it's going to be hard. It's hard for me to keep any evening or night weekly functions because of comedy. Right. I already got booked on a show that I think is going to mess up next Monday for me, which I feel bad about. And they're hearing, if they're listening, they are finding out right now about this. Yeah. But that's gonna happen. I'm a stand-up comedian. I can't keep weekly dates, you know? Like, unless it's during the day. You know what I mean? So maybe I gotta start doing like a Sunday afternoon EverQuest time or something like that. I don't know. But
EverQuest, if you want to play EverQuest. EverQuest Church sounds really
EverQuest
good.
EverQuest Church. Ooh, actually, what about first thing in the morning Sunday EverQuest?
That's what I'm
saying. That actually sounds pretty delightful. Incredible.
EverQuest.
10 a.m. EverQuest. And then that way, if you have a free Sunday, you can go a really long sesh.
Come pray at the altar of whatever those belts are called or whatever the fuck you all call
it. The Crushbone belt. Crushbone. Yeah.
Come pray at the Crushbone belt altar.
Emperor Crushbone's altar. And that's where you will pray, you know? The frog for whom the bell tolls, right?
Old Gamers Almanac is produced by Matt Martins and Hunter Donaldson, with music by Knight Corey. If you liked our little show, consider giving us a 5-star rating or heading over to patreon.com/oldgamersalmanac.